Yeah.
All right, here it is. Without further ado.
Welcome back to Reason Together, the podcast for Christians who think about stuff. I'm your host, Daniel Fox, here along with my great friend, Thomas Balsamo. How are you, Tom?
Oh, good. Good.
Good. Entering into another, you know what, the term comes to mind, full-throated. I'm not sure what that means, but I just feel like saying it. Another full-throated discussion.
Full-throated.
About, yeah. Have you ever heard of that?
It seems I have, but I don't know what it refers to. How would you use that in a sentence?
I'm not sure, just like I just used it, but I don't know if that I used it right. A full-throated discussion.
No. It sounds to me like that means I should be like a bass or something.
Okay. Okay, quick timeout. You don't, if you're new to this podcast and you don't know us yet, you're going, what in the world is going on here?
Yeah, who are these guys?
That's right. They haven't even gotten through the introduction. They're talking. I'm looking up full-throated and there's no entries found. And maybe I'm just like making up a term as we go along. Anyway.
I may have a question actually that has something to do with that as we go on, but we might not get to it today. We'll see.
You've landed at the podcast that talks about just basic issues of life and how to connect them to scripture and trying to reason through things and encourage each other to think and to balance things in life, a Christian life specifically. And so anyway, Tom, how have you been doing?
Good. Doing well. I got back into some training today, and I had somewhat of a milestone last week in that I was given my red black belt, it's called. Is more...
Jiu-Jitsu?
No, this is...
Krav.
It's the Krav program. It's 360 defense, technically.
Okay.
If we're going to be technical, it's a belt not in Krav Maga, but in what's called 360 defense, which is a blend of Krav Maga and Muay Thai kickboxing.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So I got the red black belt. It's not one that you formally test for. It's kind of one that when they feel like you're ready for it, they at the end of class, they'll just give it to you, kind of surprise.
Wow.
And so I got that, and that's basically scarier than it is congratulatory. Here's why. Because it means you are getting inducted into boot camp.
Oh, boy.
It is called Black Belt Boot Camp. And it's the most intense 3 months of your entire 4 to 5 years of training that you do to earn a black belt in 360 defense. Which for me starts in January. So it'll be January, February, March. Will be some very busy, very intense months. That's why I say it's more scary than it is congratulatory.
Well, at least it doesn't start like now.
Yeah.
Here we're going to take you through Thanksgiving and Christmas on this intense workout schedule.
Yeah, that would not be good. I don't even think they do a boot camp this time of year anyway, but...
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, so if you're a faithful listener and you're anticipating the January episodes, I'll talk more. Well, if you hear any slight snoring in the background...
Groaning.
That's right.
When I sit down in my chair, breathing. It'll be,
And it won't be because the questions are getting any harder. It'll just... Yeah. Now you'll know the backstory there. Wow. Well, anyway, congratulations on it, since they're not, sorry that it means that, that terror, I guess, but
thanks.
That's,
So that's what's been on my mind lately. Plus, preparing for some vendor fairs coming up here, being that it's the holiday season.
Yes.
The online store picks up a little bit and we start taking some of those things and moving them into the meat space, as they call it, and selling them in front of actual people at vendor fairs.
Okay.
And so I've been working on stuff in the shop, too, in addition to my sermon preparation and ministry things and visits that I already do, so.
Yeah, other than that, what's keeping you busy? I'm just kidding.
I occasionally moonlight in surgery.
You occasionally what?
Moonlight in surgery.
Yes. Wow.
So, did a neat case last Friday, but anyway, I don't want to bore the people with that.
Yeah. Well, neat. It's neat that God allows you to do what you love, isn't it?
Yeah.
On multiple levels. you know, that you love that, but you love preaching and studying mm-hmm. and, you know,
yeah,
influencing people. So,
yeah, obviously I wish that's I neat. Could focus primarily just on ministry. That to me is what the Lord has called me to. but you know, sometimes the Lord has other plans for you that include doing other things,
right?
As well. But, yeah, so that's that.
All right.
But, what about you?
Dealing with a couple broken bones at home. Other than that, I think we're not pretty good.
Is that all?
Yeah, just a couple. Those there, some head colds, broken bones. Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate?
Yeah, a little bit. My son, he fractured his wrist about 2.5 weeks ago.
Playing the big ball volleyball, right?
Yeah, the big ball. Yep, and stuff happens. As we move on here, what do we got? Any like feedback from other episodes that we want to cover before we jump into like a whole list of like 10 questions that we won't get to today?
Yes. Yes, we do have feedback, and yes, we probably won't get to everything today. This one is from, I think, our last episode. You had asked the question about, can you separate the belief in holiness from mm-hmm. living in practical holiness?
Right.
And I think we had answered no.
right.
And Omar replies, and he says, I enjoyed your discussion in this podcast about holiness and separation. I was wondering, though, if there are actually people who preach positional holiness but deny a necessity of practical holiness, or do they just have a different definition of practical holiness than we do? I'm not talking about Bible-denying liberals, but in groups that would take the Bible as authoritative, I think there's often a fundamental disagreement over the definition of worldliness. For instance, an Amish person defines worldliness as electricities and vehicles. A fundamentalist defines it as haircuts and clothing style, and a, quote, liberal defines it as immorality, wrath, strife, envying, drunkenness, etc., Galatians 5:19-21. If separation just means changing your clothes and getting a haircut, that's pretty easy. If it means not cutting down your coworkers in order to get a promotion at work, that's much more difficult. So which of these people really is the more separated from the world? Granted, the two aren't mutually exclusive, but maybe we should appreciate those who are, quote, separate from the world in a different way than we are. Boy, there's a lot there.
yeah, there's multiple questions there. And I would say right at the outset that I don't mean to disparage everybody who doesn't, you know, practice exactly the way that I practice. I've certainly, you know, come to the point where you can appreciate people's love for the Lord. They have an evident desire to, you know, they just have an evident love for the Lord. And we may not fall down exactly the same on all practical applications, but I can recognize that. And to his question on, is there actually somebody out there who preaches holiness but not separation? I can't cite a specific, but what we did cite in the... And that, so that's a good question, though. I appreciate it. But what I was mentioning last time was, to me, that the whole new evangelical sphere was basically kind of built on the concept of a lack of separation. And yet I would imagine that they'd have to preach holiness. So I'm kind of like, well, wait, how do they justify
well,
that?
Well, I mean, he deals with that in his question. Omar does, by the way, because he says that liberal, quote, liberal defines separation as immorality, wrath, strife, envying, drunkenness. That's how they describe the world. So a liberal, to use Omar's word, is someone who says, to practice holiness, I'm going to separate from mostly these intangible things, immorality, you know, wrath, strife, envy. Well, I guess not all of them are intangible, but like wrath, strife, envying, and so on. Because I think when it comes down to it, the most unattractive part to human nature about personal holiness is the practical stuff. Right?
Yeah, I see, I see.
That's the stuff people hate. You know, they don't like anything that is restrictive to their practice.
Okay, yeah, there you go. When you get down to their practice, then you start to feel it.
Yeah, because anyone will say, you know, yeah, I should separate from envying, strife, and wrath, and so on.
Yeah, but then defining that and saying, what is that, and what does envy look like in your own life, or what is... even separation further.
Yeah.
I guess what the way I would kind of going to a definition of worldliness, without defining worldliness, I would say what I'm talking about is an expression of a philosophy of the world. Well, when I ask myself, how do you express yourself? When you see somebody, how are they expressing themselves?
Yeah.
Will they express themselves, you know, verbally? They express themselves in their, you know, in their, maybe their body language, in the way that they dress, the music they listen to. That is all a self-expression. Well, if my self-expression seems to mirror very closely to the world's expression, I'm saying that should be different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If a philosophy that says, you know, you're cool if you do this, or you're, you know, right. you're acceptable if you do this, and you listen to this kind of music.
Right. What? Or, I think part of Omar's response here is simply put that, you know, I would, you know, look at you from what I know of you, from what I see of you outwardly, I'd say there's a separate guy. There's a guy who practices holiness in his life, but yet an Amish person would look at you and be like, look at that worldly carnal person.
Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying? So Omar's question seems to be, if separation means changing your clothes and getting a haircut, that's pretty easy. If it means not cutting down your coworkers in order to get a promotion, that's much more difficult. So which of these people is really more separated from the world? You understand his question? You know, who's...
Kind of. I mean, I guess my thought going to... The reason I kind of say it that way is a personal expression, you know, an expression of a worldly philosophy. In what way is electricity an expression of a worldly philosophy? Well, to me, I go, it's a thing. It's an invention. You know what I mean? We don't have styles of electricity.
Right.
You know?
Well, I can't speak for the Amish, but... I would tend to think their view of it is that people use it for sinful things. There was, I actually spoke with my wife's grandmother one time, who actually is Amish, and was able to give the gospel to her a little bit. And in talking with her, she brought up radios in cars as being one of the reasons why they don't like cars.
Really?
And she said about all the things that are bad on the radio. And, you know, I told her, well, I mean, you could just change the station. you know, their reason for rejecting the radio was there's bad stuff that people do with it. And I think maybe their reasoning for rejecting electricity is the same. So they say, oh, that's all worldly. But anyway, I'm digressing here. To get kind of back to maybe the heart of the issue about worldliness, I think the Apostle John sums it up very generally. Actually, he doesn't get much more specific than this. In 1 John 2:15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. So worldliness seems to be one's relationship to the world and the things of it. In other words, is it a love relationship, or is it more of a pilgrimage relationship? I'm just kind of here.
I see.
Passing through here.
and that would be confirmed by James. If any man be a friend of the world, he's the enemy of God.
Yeah.
Right? There's a friend relationship there.
Right.
Okay.
A love relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And I guess when it comes down to it, is Omar's question here maybe saying that some people love the world different degrees than others?
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think the point is certainly is there that to say, if I just say it's a haircut and change my clothes, then I can do that and the heart's not changed.
Yeah, you could still
love the world. But I can say I'm separated. Yeah, but you know, people like that can love the world and be envious and be, you know, kind of irritated and agitated and bitter at people who don't do that, because they're like, if I got to do it, you got to do it, you know, because I'm being separated and then, you know, being carnal and all that. So it's just...
Yeah, like getting back to the Amish for a second, and I mean, not to necessarily pick on them too much. Granted, they probably won't ever hear this.
Right.
There does seem to be a tendency in a lot of Amish communities that, as separate as they are from the world, they kind of secretly love it. You know what I mean? And they kind of toy with it a little bit, and they're interested in it, but they got to be separate from it.
You mean love the world? They're interested in the world.
They're interested in cell phones and technology, and you know, when they see a TV at Walmart, they just stand there glued to it sometimes, and you know, there seems to be almost a secret love for it. So as separate as their practice is, the heart still longs for the things that they think are carnal and worldly. And I think a Christian can be the same way, even a fundamentalist Christian.
Yes.
They can cut their hair a certain way, they can wear certain clothes, and still love the world.
And contrary wise, I think maybe he could be getting to the point that there's somebody that maybe not cut their hair like I do or wear the clothes that I do, but does love the Lord.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That somebody might appear very separated and yet love the world. Someone else may love the Lord, put it that way, you know, love the world less and yet not appear like I do. So, I mean, that's something I wanted to discuss with my kids is that, look, when we talk about holiness, you know, this concept of separation, there is of necessity a line in there somewhere that we have to draw.
Yeah.
But we're going to draw our lines in different places that other people are going to draw their lines.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and we have to, just because somebody else draws their line in a different place doesn't make me wrong.
Right.
You know what I mean? That I say, well, why am I drawing my line here? If somebody else can draw their line there and be right with God. Well, okay, in some way that's, you know, if the principle is laid but not a specific application, then I just have to determine what I believe in my own heart and conscience would please the Lord. And I love that analogy of cliffs and fences.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm putting my fence here. Yes. That I'm putting my fence here because I believe this is the safest thing to do. Now, you might put your fence out a little bit. You might pull your fence in, you know.
Yeah.
But there is that. There's kind of that latitude for change and getting them to understand that. In a sense, we have reasons for why we do what we do. Of course, we think it's best for us because hence that's the reason we do it. But at the same time, we don't look down on everybody because they're a little different.
Right.
And that's an easy thing to communicate that we don't listen to that kind of music. That's bad music. Well, okay, wait. You know.
Here's the thing, though. If I can maybe play devil's advocate for a second, if we're going to draw our lines of separation differently than some others and think that maybe they're wrong, then are we concluding that matters of personal separation are matters of preference? That's the pushback. I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Right.
Because then someone would say, okay, if your lines can be drawn differently and someone can look different than you and be separate different than you, but still be a godly person, then aren't these matters of separation just preferences?
No, I mean, that doesn't logically follow to me because it's not that I as a person am giving two different choices. Like God says, hey, look, you can choose this or this. I really don't care. You know, and I go, oh, I think I'll choose the more conservative of the two options. You know, I have to analyze my own conscience and my own relationship to the Lord, the light he's given to me, the understanding of scripture, you know, whatever. And wherever I'm at, I have to make the best decision I can. Okay. I don't really have two options. I have a one option of making the best decision I can. Okay. Now, somebody else may be in a different spot. They know more or less than I do, or they see other factors, or their conscience allows them. And I can, in a sense, to a point, I can allow that. And again, it doesn't have to be a rule to me. Yeah. Does that make sense that
it
I don't
does.
Have two options?
So let me play devil's advocate again.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
You little devil.
Yeah. So if you, it seems like you're suggesting then that since these are not matters of preference, they're more matters of maybe knowledge of holiness or knowledge of righteousness. So then you would be saying that the choices you make in your practical life, in your separation, if someone doesn't make as conservative choices as you make, their problem is ignorance?
I think that it is part of it. And I will, let's see, there's a verse coming to my mind here. Paul says, not pulling up the exact spot here, but I think it was at Romans 13, 14, 15, somewhere in there,
but
or
put
First
you
Corinthians.
On the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh, or is that 14,
no? 13? Where he says, you know, we with knowledge of the idol, you know, we basically we understand that an idol's nothing in the world. So I'm good with it. You know what I mean? It doesn't bother me.
Yeah,
I can eat the meat offered to an idol.
14.
Okay. But the man with knowledge of the idol, or however he puts it, you know, that this guy kind of, you know, in his mindset, that idol means something. And so the meat offered to that idol, well, that just doesn't seem right. Where so in a sense, is that a preference thing? Like, well, look, I mean, you can eat the meat or not eat the meat. Well, yeah, technically, but in each person's mind, it's not really a preference. It's where their knowledge is at, you know. And Paul's saying, "Look, I know that the idol's nothing. I know that." The other guy apparently doesn't. If I could put it this way, mm-hmm. know that.
Right.
In his conscience, he's operating on a different set of, you know,
I don't think feelings
and beliefs.
I don't think that necessarily applies to what we're saying, though, with the matter of separation, because what you're saying is that practical matters of separation, what you choose, you're suggesting is right, and the other person is wrong because they maybe don't know what you know, at least in part. But you're talking about in Romans 14 where eating the meat or not eating the meat doesn't matter. Both choices are okay.
Well, I think to some degree we make a mistake in using the right and wrong and kind of taking it out of the jurisdiction, if you know what I mean. It's right for me to do, and it would be wrong for me to do what they're doing. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong for them to do what they're doing. If they're operating by their conscience and under the leadership of the Holy Spirit and growing where they're at the time. You know what I mean?
Good point.
So to say they're wrong, I don't know if I can say that.
Right.
Now, would I be wrong to do it? Yes, because I'd be violating my conscience and the
right.
knowledge that I feel like I have.
Right, I see. And at some point, if they learn differently and learn what you learn, if they continue doing what they're doing, at that point you'd say it would be wrong for them.
I would admit, yeah, I mean, yeah, at some point. Now, I don't know where that point is. And then I always have to be open to the fact that I have growing to do. Mm-hmm. And I may learn something and learn more, and maybe it'll influence my perception of my own standards.
Yeah.
Right? And may even mean a loosening of my standards. Now, I know that sounds super scary, and if somebody's listening to me, oh, these guys are trying to tear down standards. No, of course not. You know, we have high standards. But I also have to, you know, acknowledge that sometimes you grow up in, for lack of a better term, camps or whatever. You grow up under certain mindsets that say, you know, this is right or wrong. And then you grow, and then as you're growing, you start to question that and go, man, what's right or wrong about it? And you really come to the point that, man, I really don't know what's wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, no, you made the point I was getting ready to make, is that sometimes you realize certain things were kind of more of a protection for while you mm-hmm. were in your developmental stage of Christian growth.
And that's a good point.
Yeah, and you find
that
out
it
later,
might have been right for then.
Yeah.
Even it was good then, but at a certain point then you've grown, you've matured and said, okay, good, that did protect me, and yeah. now I recognize the placement of it.
Yeah. Oh man, it's a good question, good feedback that spent a while on that. There's more here, by the way. I should mention this is going to be an Omar episode today. We should just have a third host and bring Omar in here.
That's right.
Which, by the way, everyone else who's listening and not sending in feedback and questions, where are you at?
Tisk. Yeah. We're sharing this patron feedback, and he happens to be one that offers a bit of feedback, and we appreciate that.
Yeah. 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 And we know you all listen. I see the analytics. You send some feedback right in or something. This one is kind of a funny question. And it's kind of admittedly silly, I think.
I just saw it like an hour before the podcast, and I almost broke out laughing when I saw it. It was funny.
Yeah. And this, I hope it doesn't sound like a dorm room question, but there is some actual thinking involved in this question.
Yeah.
All right, here it is. Without further ado.
Nice French accent there.
Subject, speeding. He says, so just a fun, quick question out of the blue. Would your church discipline someone in your church for repeatedly and unrepentantly driving over the speed limit? If not, why not?
Because do you know how many churches would be pastorless if they started doing that? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, man. Okay, so my first thought is, if you have a law on the books, okay?
My first thought is...
it's not coming. Yeah,
but
yeah. If you have a law on the books and it is not enforced, what does that even mean? And what I mean by this is, okay, right, you have places where the speed limit is 55 miles per hour,
right,
but the police don't pull you over unless you go like 62, 63,
right,
65.
Right.
And even then, sometimes you're just not likely to get pulled over. If a law is not enforced, what is it then? What does it become at that point?
A suggestion.
Okay.
Right.
So, but is it then still wrong if you drive 60 in a 55 mile an hour zone? Is that making sense? I mean,
sure.
And that's kind of where my mind goes with this. And honestly, I don't know how to answer Omar's question, because what we're dealing with here is obviously it's a rule of government, not a rule of God. God doesn't say anything about speeding, but he does say something about obeying government.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And if the law in the books is 55 miles an hour and you're going 60, are you technically breaking the law? Yes. But if they don't enforce it, then what? I mean, is it still the responsibility of the person to obey it?
Yeah. I guess I took it a little different, like, when I thought of it, it was like a guy who's like flagrantly, you know, speeding, you know, blazing through these slow zones, or, you know, say school zones or whatever. And even, I don't know, maybe even getting tickets. I mean, I don't care. I'm just going to drive. You know, I guess that was my thought. Not necessarily like driving 3 miles per hour over the actual speed limit.
Yeah.
Though that is a valid, you know, question. However, I mean, of course, it's somewhat of a silly question, and it is a hypothetical because, you know, he's unrepenting, he's unchanging.
Yeah.
So then obviously you have issues. On a, I guess, a little bit more serious level, it's going to the issue that, okay, this is sort of a public sin, right? If he gets pulled over every other week and he's on the side of the road and they say, hey, that's Joe. I know Joe. He goes to First Baptist Church, you know? I see him there all the time. Man, he just doesn't obey those laws at all. Then would you church a guy for that?
I don't know. It just doesn't seem like something that I would do, but I mean,
right,
for all the technical reasons that exist, it seems like something that you ought to.
But if you say you won't, you sound like a
right
liberal.
Yes. But let me ask you this also. I mean, in like Romans 2:29, Paul makes a distinction between the spirit and the letter of the law. And I know that's obviously talking about a different subject there. He's talking about one who's a Jew inwardly by the circumcision of the heart, not by the circumcision of the body. He says that person is essentially a Jew in spirit, not in the letter. Whose praise is not of men, but of God. And I've heard people talk before about the difference between the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. I actually talked to a police officer one time who said basically a similar thing in concept. He said, if you're driving a few miles an hour over the speed limit, but you seem to be driving safely, we're not after you. He said, we're looking for the erratic driver. We're looking for the reckless driver. And now obviously sometimes they just pull you over if you're just going fast. I don't know if they have nothing better planned at the moment or if they're trying to meet a quota or something, but I mean, for the most part, they are looking for the unsafe, reckless driver. And he told me that if the flow of traffic is moving at 70 in a 65 mile an hour zone, that they really don't care about that. But if the flow of traffic is moving at 70 in a 65 mile an hour zone and somebody's coming through at 85, that guy's getting pulled over.
Yeah.
So they're essentially saying that they're looking for the person who is breaking not only the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law as well.
And that's a good point. That's a good point. And I can see that analogy, you know, that there's a window in the spirit of the law. It's not the actual, okay, they had to put a line somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, 55. All right. 55. Keep it at 55.
Yeah.
But there's sort of a window of tolerance. Going back to his question, though, would you church a guy over that? You know, obviously more would go into that. Is that the only problem in his life?
I would think otherwise.
He's immorally right.
Yeah.
I would think if he has authority issues like that, that's probably, he's like oozing authority issues.
Yeah.
And it's going to be easy to confront him on those things. And to remember that, and I'm using this term as a short for it, churching a guy, you know, isn't basically, hey, you know, I've noticed that you have this problem and we don't like it. It's kind of a disgrace to our church. So boom, you're out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That if you're following in Matthew 18, there is a process to this.
Sure.
And it is recognizing an offense, to say, look, you know, this is offensive to us or to some in the body, or, you know, what this represents. What if this is offensive? Okay. Well, he doesn't listen. Take a couple more with you. This is offensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What can we do about this? Oh, he's hardened. He's not listening. You know what I mean? There's a record. So if somebody just gets the idea that I just church discipline somebody because boom, you know, I didn't like that. You just have to remember the process too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you made a good point there saying he's probably got other issues. If he is flagrantly disobeying both the spirit and the letter of the law, almost getting enjoyment out of it, you know, if that's the kind of guy we're thinking of here, then he's probably got other issues as well. yeah. Anyway, let's go to another one here. This is again also from Omar. He's just flooding us this week with questiony goodness. This one is actually questiony goodness. Yes. This one is from the patron message board, and I thought I would include it on the episode as well.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't normally do that, but I thought this would be a good one to throw out there. He says, a question for Tom, Daniel, and anyone else who wants to join in. Is there value to Christian asceticism today? By asceticism, am I saying that word right?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh, right.
He says, by asceticism, I don't mean becoming a monk, but practicing extra-biblical self-denial for the sake of spiritual growth. Would Christians be benefited by imposing on ourselves ways to suffer for the faith? Paul seemed to suggest he does this as a way to strengthen himself, just as an athlete takes on hardships to prepare for a race. And he referenced 1 Corinthians 9:27, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. But later, in warning about false teachers, Paul describes them as teaching asceticism. 1 Timothy 4:3, he says, they're forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from meats, which God hath created to be received with thanksgiving, and so on. When Paul wrote, quote, thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ, 2 Timothy 2:3, was he merely saying that we should endure hardships if they come, or that we should make hardships for ourselves as means of growth? To make this practical, one, am I benefited spiritually? And two, is God pleased if I willingly give up pleasures like TV or colored dress shirts or electricity like the Amish? Not because I think they're evil, but I just want to deny myself pleasure for the sake of the Lord. That's a good question.
I would disagree that Paul suggests asceticism and the creating of difficulties. To me, you have to distinguish. There's a difference between discipline and asceticism, and that's what Paul was dealing with. I think is that discipline is work, and it is denying yourself some things,
temperance.
And it is difficult. Temperance, that's right. And so, because you have this, you know, raging flesh or whatever, because you have this opposing nature, you are in a struggle internally to even do the right thing, and that's going to take a measure of more than endurance, really. It's gonna take a fight, and like Paul says, keeping under to maintain your qualification for ministry, you know, to maintain your level of fitness, if you will. It's not creating anything more difficult for yourself. Now, in the time that I can think of where I create a difficult for me is on a temporary basis for a specific purpose. And that is, I say, I'm going to deny myself in the terms of fasting.
Fasting, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, which primarily I think you could take the principle to other things, like I'm going to fast from this, from that, like Lent or whatever. But basically, you know, I think kind of the more obvious context is food in the scripture. And so if you say, I'm going to set aside this meal or two meals for the purpose of something specific, like to say, this is grieving me, and I want to take some of that time to pray and show the Lord that I'm serious about this need. And I just recently mentioned this in a I think it was a Sunday evening message. No, maybe it's a Sunday morning message. Thinking about the issue of fasting, when we come up against some difficulty in our life, when we, you know, we're kind of scared. Mm-hmm. Like for me, I'm certainly in the mode of child rearing, right? And so you face some things in your children, you're like, whoa, man, that's got to change. Or wow, I'm scared for my child. But maybe it's something mm-hmm. different. Maybe yeah. it's some other family matter or whatever. And you say, man, I'm really scared about this. And then somebody asks you, well, have you fasted about it? And you're like, oh, no, I haven't. You know, what we're basically...
I don't understand what that would do.
Well, here's my thought on it was to say...
If I'm scared about it is what I mean. I mean, I have an opinion of what I think it would do otherwise, but scared about it, I'm not sure I understand.
I think what it can... Well, I mean, by scared, I'm saying that it's something that is just a burden to me, that it's a big deal. And, you know, it's something I would ask other people to pray for, and even I pray for. But then I ask myself, would I even skip a meal over this? Mm-hmm. And how many times don't we?
Yeah.
You know, we're like, oh man, this is serious business, but I wouldn't skip a meal over it. Really? I mean, I wouldn't deny myself a meal to pray over this thing.
I
mean,
yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I think we're kind of getting away from his main question was, am I benefited spiritually by doing ascetic things? And secondly, is God pleased if I willingly give up pleasures? And I'm going to give you my opinion, and then I'll tell you yep. why. To the first question, am I benefited spiritually? I would say on a practical level, possibly extending to a spiritual level, I'm going to say yes. And the second question, is God pleased with me if I willingly give up pleasures? I think that's a much harder question to answer. Part of me wants mm-hmm. to say, well, no, if it's something that's permissible anyway, and you give it up, is God more pleased with you than with someone who doesn't give up that thing?
Yeah, right.
I think the answer to the second question would be no. Is God pleased with me if I willingly give up pleasures? Not necessarily, but am I benefited spiritually? I think I am, because there is, in a practical sense, in the Christian life, a benefit to learning to do hard things. And I am a big proponent of the purposeful, willful doing of hard things. They call this in the Krav Maga world, stress inoculation.
Hmm.
And the first time you ever do a drill like this, it's terrifying. You know, you're in a room full of people with these pads on, and they're all smashing into you, and you got your eyes closed, and you're supposed to stay on your feet, and you're supposed to fight them, and you know, it's stressful, it's terrifying. But over time, you find that you do better when you're able to relax. You're able to think clearer, you're able to move better, and because you're used to the stress, you're used to the inoculation of the stress against the stress. And I think it's obvious in the Christian life, you're going to deal with mentally hard things, spiritually hard things, many times even physically hard things. And if you know you've been through really difficult things before and succeeded, it's a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? On a practical level, right. To say, okay, I've handled the mental stress of something like that before in my quote unquote Christian training. I can handle this now. The Lord got me through that. He'll get me through this.
And I see what you're saying, and I don't know that I agree with you, and I guess I would come close to calling that what I call discipline.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm doing it for the sake of disciplining myself to be a stronger person, but if I'm just saying, I just want to show the Lord I love him, so I'm going to give up stuff. No, yeah. I don't think that that benefits you anything,
right,
personally. And is God pleased with it? No, not really, unless he said, I want you to give that up. But see, that's not, that's aside from his question, because it's just more like, I choose what I want to give up just to express my love for the Lord.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the blanket drops down from heaven and God says, here, Peter, take and eat. Oh, I can't eat that. That's unclean. Yeah. Hey, what I've called clean, don't call you unclean. Now, I know that was a vision kind of prepping him for the centurion. But the point is, if God says, here, I want you to have this. And you go, no, I don't want that because I love you. You go, wait, I've given this to you. You know,
yeah,
don't reject what I've given to you. Well, if he's given you blessings in your life, you know, and you say, no, I don't want those blessings because I love you. That seems like a really a personal, like I'm taking it into my hands to determine what I'm going to deprive myself of so that you'll be pleased. And I think that presents a wrong picture of God.
Well, here, let me push back on that a little bit. Or actually, I guess it's not push back. Here's an alternative thought. In 2 Timothy 2 and verse 4, he uses the illustration here of a soldier, and he says, no man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier.
Good.
Mm-hmm. And he also goes on then using the illustration of an athlete. And if a man also strive for masteries, yet is he not crowned except he strive lawfully. So basically, you got to play the game by the rules, do things God's way, if we can take that illustration into the Christian life. But there is a sense in which he is using this to describe future reward. Okay. And when we think about the judgment seat of Christ, we're going to be rewarded. Is there perhaps a correlation between someone's willful diligence, willful doing of hard things, not entangling himself with the affairs of this life, and the degree of reward that he'll receive at the judgment seat?
I don't know that I would say. I don't know. I have to think about that one. I don't know if there's a direct correlation. Like, well, you gave up so many things, therefore I reward you more.
No. What I'm saying is, you became more disciplined, so I'm rewarding you more. Not, you gave up this and the other guy didn't, so you get the reward for giving up TV. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying someone's degree of disciplining themselves, how serious they take the Christian life, how temperate they are in all things, how much they strive for the mastery of the Christian life, is a measure of their discipline.
Yeah, and again, I wouldn't disagree with that, because you're saying it's a discipline and it's a neglecting, not neglecting, it's not the right word, but it's a setting aside of things for the purpose of focus on something. But if I start to set aside some pretty extreme things, I think I become intemperate and I become sort of a freak show. And I become really, I'm saying, and then I become like a distraction. People are like, I would listen to you, but you're kind of weird.
Yes.
You know, because you've made yourself weird.
I love the Lord. I knew a guy like that. So zealous for the Lord, so temperate in all things, that he became very bizarre. And I mean, he looked crazed, and I tried witnessing to someone with him alongside me one time, and it just did not go well. Just because he creeped people out. Anyway, I won't go into detail.
But go ahead.
But I was going to say, if then discipline is something that is rewarded at the judgment seat as a striving for to please one who called him to be a soldier, if discipline is rewarded, and you use the giving up of temporal things as a means of disciplining yourself, are you not then going to be rewarded more?
Rewarded more for what? The giving up of the things or the discipline?
For the discipline. But how do you get disciplined if you don't unentangle yourself from the affairs of this life?
Yeah. I mean, but again, that discipline, I guess, can only go, can go to an extreme.
It can.
You can over-discipline yourself, I guess, is what I would be saying.
Well, yeah, and I think also your reasons for discipline need to be dead on. Because if I'm disciplining myself because I'm looking forward to the judgment seat of Christ, I think that's a biblical motive. Mm-hmm. But if I'm disciplining myself to look better than Joe somebody next to me, that's a fleshly motive. That's wood, hay, and stubble.
Right, right, sure. And I'm thinking of like people in the past, and I don't know what religion, you know, but say this guy, you know, he takes his whip and he whips his own body, you know, to say, I hate my flesh. I hate my flesh, you know. Oh, okay. You know, is that valuable because he's, you know, beating himself down like that? No.
No.
You know, and, no. And there's a, at a certain point you're saying I'm disciplined for a focused purpose because I want to please the Lord. And if I sense I'm not pleasing the Lord as well as I could be, so I need to neglect some things. Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
But if it's just a, let's start putting away things to show how much I love the Lord. You know,
yeah, that's a, man, that's a really good question. A really good question. Mm-hmm. And it seems like in some way that asceticism can in fact be used, to benefit oneself at the judgment seat of Christ. If they've got proper motives and if what they're doing doesn't violate another principle of scripture, like violating the temple of the Holy Ghost by whipping yourself with a flail or something.
I don't know that I would even use the word asceticism. As I look at the definition, it says severe self-discipline and avoidance of all forms of indulgence. Okay.
All forms of
And that's severe self-discipline. Well, if I basically say, well, severe self-discipline can be used to be, you know, appropriately disciplined. No, it's kind of contradictory in its terms.
Well, based on the definition of the word, I don't know that asceticism would be the word we would choose. We would probably just say discipline, or even to get more biblical than that, temperance, and to not entangle oneself with the affairs of this life.
Yes, yes, and those would be good passages to go to. Yeah. But as soon as you like go to an extreme, then are you temperate?
No.
You know. No, you're not.
No. Yeah. So. Anyway. Man, we're out of time already.
My goodness.
Wow.
I'm looking at the other questions. Oh, can we squeeze one? Can we squeeze like one more in?
Oh, maybe, man.
Maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't. We're at 47, we'll wait till 48 minutes already.
Yeah, yeah, we'll wait.
Okay, well, thank you all for listening. We appreciate you hearing this banter, and thank you for your support to our patrons. Appreciate you guys. As always, if you have a question or feedback you'd like to send, be brave like Omar today.
Yeah.
He gave us an entire episode here. Send it to reasontogetherpodcast@gmail.com. That's reasontogetherpodcast@gmail.com. Anyway, thank you again. We are encouraging balance, developing perspective, and connecting faith to practice. This is Reason Together.